This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Con Fringe reading series.
Hello. Are you all filled up on drinks and quite happy? Yes. Jolly good.
Right, now we're going to do a little bit of a Q&A with them.
You can sit wherever you like.
You can ask me questions as well if you want.
I don't know, I'm just sitting here. I think it's probably safe. You
can sit there and feel the barrage of questions. Okay. This is the bit that's not scary.
Okay.
Right. So Pete and Emma are married. So what's it like?
To each other.
Yes. Yeah. to each other. So I would like to ask Pete and Emma, individually and as a team, what's it like living with a writer?
This is one of these questions where people think, oh, are they really telling the truth? Because obviously their spouse is sitting next to them. No, it's actually really brilliant. And I feel very, very lucky on a daily basis, actually, to be living with a writer, because it means that all of the stuff that he drives us mad, he understands completely. And also, he's totally cool with me going up to his office and saying, I'm really stuck on this thing because there's this thing I'm going to do with this next scene and the person's gone into this room, but then if they're in that room, then that other thing can't happen. And then he'll listen and go, but then you could try this, and unpicks a knot, and it's great, and doesn't just look at me. And doesn't mind when I say in the middle of something completely different, oh, but what about if they had chips in their brains that recorded everything? Wouldn't this happen? And just be able to jump into the conversation, that's great.
So yeah, I mean, essentially what Em said, I actually feel quite lucky, because I think there's a sort of madness that builds up relatively quickly if you're writing something on your own in an echo chamber. And being able to release the valve on that on a regular basis is just marvellous. And it's not always the big things that get to be problematic for me either. Sometimes it's something really stupid. I've written myself in a corner and I've got in some city. And then you take it to someone else and they say, no, we'll just make it three of them then. Why are you worried about it being two? Oh, right. And then you've got to do it. But if you haven't got that person there, that could be something that could send you into a spiral for ages. And in fact, based on this whole thing, I wanted to spread the love, which is why at BristolCon, that was what my workshop was kind of helping people who were stuck. Because I know how valuable it's been for me. Generally, it's absolutely brilliant. I don't quite understand how people write books without living with another writer in many ways, having never had any other experience.
And the other really great thing as well is that when Between Two Thorns came out and the first reviews came out, he could read them for me first because I was so scared. So if there was something that popped up, I could say, can you read this, please? And then he'd read it and go, oh, yeah, you can read that one. And now that Pete has obviously got his deal, he started writing a few years properly after I started writing, and so I was able to help him through the early dark years, and now being able to help and advise with the kind of the publishing madness and all of the fears, so Pete can come downstairs and go, there's this thing on a rerun, and I go, yeah, that's going to be like that now for the rest of your life. And it's nice to know that it's not just, you know, me that feels those things, and vice versa, I think.
Yeah, not much to add, I mean, really. It's always an advantage to have someone else do all the things first and go through the pain and then, you know, save you that, which I think that's what love really is all about. So thanks, darling.
And also the marriage survived me saying no to the first book.
So the Vagrant's not the first book that I've written in terms of manuscripts. It's about the fourth. And some of the, you've written a book. And I'm like, I've written a book. So I was saying to Emma, I've written a book. She said, that's enough, you read it. And then she said, that's nice, write another one. But of course, that saved me all the submissions and rejections. And so, you know, yes. So the marriage survived, you know, but if we'd had this conversation those years ago, I probably would be a bit more sad-faced.
Thank you. Now, Emma, the last three books you wrote were very fantasy. There's Split Worlds, which were lovely, and they were great. But I know that you wrote science fiction before, with 20 Years Later. So what prompted you to move back to science fiction, and do you enjoy the kind of switching between the two?
Yeah, the first thing I'm going to say is I've actually come to realise I don't think 20 Years Later is science fiction. I've come to realise, looking at the whole trilogy, that it's actually urban fantasy set in a post-apocalyptic London, which isn't as sci-fi as Planetfall, which is what I would call proper sci-fi. And the thing about writing Planetfall was that it felt like I was coming home, because all I read all of my childhood, once I'd discovered those beautiful golden fields of science fiction books in the library, all I read was science fiction all the way through my teens. All of the books, the only other books I had to read were because teachers forced me to read them. I didn't read anything else. I've never been a big reader of fantasy. And so it was really bizarre to get my first kind of proper book deal with urban fantasy when I could probably count on one hand the number of urban fantasy novels I'd written, let alone read, urban fantasy or just straight fantasy. So writing Planetfall, I wrote it, well, I started it after I finished the third Split Worlds novel. In fact, I might have started it actually before then, because I'd been writing Split Worlds short stories and novels for about 2 years by that point. And I just really needed a break. And I couldn't stop thinking about this character and this idea and this sense of almost kind of psychological claustrophobia that I wanted to create in a geographical setting and in a character. And it could not be more different to the Split Worlds. It's got a character focus which is the same, the only kind of parallel. So it was a relief, and it was a real kind of breath of fresh air to write something that was first person, present tense. And all of the challenges that come with that, that you can only tell the story through that person's eyes, that you know, the decisions you make about what you tell about their past and all that kind of stuff were completely different decisions and challenges than were presented by the Split Worlds and by the 20 Years Later trilogy. So, yeah, everyone else has gone, science fiction, what? And I've been like, well, actually, the past few years of my life have been fantasy, what? And this feels natural.
Awesome.
And Pete, you've got a book coming out in April. Would you like to tell us a bit about that and whether you have any launchy plans and what you're generally up to apart from being terrified for the next couple of months?
Well, I can't tell you as much as I'd like, in a way, in that I'm having a talk with, you know, publicists and things later in the month. So I know little. Beyond that, I will be having a launch of some description. I'll probably be doing something in London, I would think, on the 23rd. By happy coincidence, I'm working in London on the 23rd, which I'm sort of pleased with and sort of really not pleased with, you know, as these things go. Plan-wise, I intend to be anywhere that will have me and doing anything that I possibly can. And that probably... Ooh.
You might want to talk to Des.
Thank you. And I imagine that everyone will be entirely sick of me by the time April the 23rd comes around, because I'll be all over, hopefully, everyone's Twitter streams, doing well, anything, frankly, for very small amounts of money.
Yeah, have a word with Des. She might just be able to help you out just a little bit there.
Right.
But has anybody else got any questions for Pete and Emma?
Where's Latimer? No, that wasn't a serious question.
Poor man on the night.
Yes, it's his night off. Thank goodness. What I was actually thinking, you know, having listened to the two of you, is obviously that you talk to each other about your books, and the one thing that struck me about both of them is that they're both about societies falling into decay, and I wondered whether that was something you discussed at all, and whether it's like something in the air.
There's a terrible miasma that's gathered around our house, and we can only write really awful, depressing books now.
We can tell their house is all the clouds hanging
out. Yeah, the lightning.
If they're both writing, nobody can move
us. I don't know about... I know the kind of the deep psychological roots of The Vagrant, and I think that's up to Pete to talk about them should he wish to. And that's one of the odd things about writing a book and then also writing a book, talking about it and working on it with someone who is as close to you as your spouse. Because sometimes Pete would write things and I'd think, I know what that's about, and that ain't what he thinks it's about. Should I say that? No, I'm not going to say that now. In a few months I might, and then we can talk about the things. But when you're a writer, you could be writing stuff and not know actually what it's really about or what the book is about until you get to the end. So that is kind of weird. In terms of decaying society, I don't know. I mean, were you thinking about decaying society in the split worlds or in Planetfall? Yeah, I mean, I see them as quite different in a way, because in The Vagrant, it's a post-demon apocalypse, so the really, really, really super bad shit that has already gone down, and it's awful. With Planetfall, there is something very fragile, and the thing that has been bad, that's millions and millions and millions of light years away. So, you know, you don't have to worry about it. So for me, with the location in Planetfall, is almost utopian at the beginning, but a fragile utopia. So they have quite a different feel to me. But then, you know, we're so into each other's stuff that we don't see each other's, like, we are each other's first beta readers, but also probably the worst beta readers, because we've sat and talked about it and had endless copies picking things apart. And so, yeah, we don't have the fresh eyes, do we?
There was a sort of comment I just wanted to kind of pick up on, is when the question was asked about if they're both writing, there's no one to hoover. And I think there is a truth in that when you're both buried, we're often both buried in our writing projects, and we've got a little boy as well, so there's kind of timing issues to do with. You have very isolated pockets of time to write. And that when I'm actually in my book mode, my ability to see dirt diminishes. And it's only often when a book is finished or you've hit a convenient breakpoint or something happens that you suddenly look around you and realise you are living in a post-apocalypse in your own home. You think, oh my, how did this happen?
Yeah. Child is the only clean thing.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, he's often the one tidying, frankly. He's had enough, you know, of yourself.
Yeah, he is very tidy.
That's one of the things, which is also very good living with Pete, is that he makes sure that I eat, because I'm rubbish at remembering to eat, just generally, but oh my god, especially when I'm writing. But that, luckily, that mechanism hasn't been lost, Pete, so. It's been a bit scary now that we're both writing for a living as well, that we are worried that we're actually turning into this strange gestalt being. And that we're kind of adopting each other's foibles and madnesses, and it's all a bit nauseating, really.
I'm going to use that as my excuse for not hoovering forever. Right. He's got a question.
Just following on from that, for the gestalt then, is have you considered doing a book together?
Yeah, the quick answer is yes. That there is... There is something, a thing that is not yet ready to write, but is something that one day we might write together. I'm being deliberately vague about that. But otherwise, no, I mean, although we talk a lot about things and sort of share ideas and that kind of thing, there is still very much a sense of, you know, Emma is writing her stuff and I'm writing my stuff. But yeah, I think that maybe one day.
I think stylistically is the biggest challenge there, because at the moment, we already discuss each other's ideas in really quite a lot of detail, and there is a lot of each other in our books already, inevitably, because of that. But if we were going to sit down and do a joint project, who would actually be writing the words on the page is what I would want to know. And our styles are very different, and the styles change in depending on
the
book
yeah.
as well. So Pete's just finished a book which is just in its first draft, which sounds completely different. And I love it, and it's very, very different to The Vagrant. This Planetfall is completely different to The Split Worlds. So whose voice, which voice, which style, I don't know. That would be very, very hard. But we do already write Tea and Jeopardy together. So we already have a collaborative project, which is mostly just us giggling like two school children, and occasionally Pete saying something and me going, no darling, that's just too silly.
Yeah, there's about a sort of 1 in 3 on a good day hit rate with ideas that I'll suggest that you'll say no. So yeah, there's a whole load of terrible stuff never made it in.
Yeah, I'm quality control.
Yeah, you're quality control.
Okay, whose idea was it to make us sing the Doctor Who theme as the chickens at FantasyCon?
I can feel that.
That was actually Lee Harris's fault, because what happened was I put it to the audience and he was the one that came up with the suggestion. But it was, I mean, if the audience had failed us, that we probably would have fallen back on something like Doctor Who. Yeah.
Yeah, in
the biggest challenge with doing a live version of Tea and Jeopardy with zero budget and zero special effects live, with no Foley, no, you know, sitting in front of Audacity for hours and hours and hours, adding in the sound effects afterwards, was creating a peril for a live audience. And so it had to come down to something where we could involve the audience, and we wanted it to be as funny, as silly as possible, because, you know, everyone was laughing so much, including me when I was supposed to be enchanted asleep, that, you know, people, I didn't get the sense that people were actually kind of questioning the plot or what was going on, because they were so busy laughing. It was exactly what we wanted.
I can confirm it's really hard to sing the theme tune of Doctor Who as a chicken with a
You
want to
try when we have to do it?
I need a whole bunch of people to do this, because you need half the room to be the brr 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 and the other half to be the brr 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 brr. You need a big bunch of people to do it, but it's really good. Has anybody else got any questions? No, all good. Right. Okay. In that case, we will move on to announcements. And I know that Cheryl has some announcements, so I'll start with Cheryl.
Yeah, I do. This is going out in a press release tomorrow, but I wanted to tell you folks first. The really smart people amongst you might have noticed that Colin Harvey's novels have disappeared off Amazon and stuff. And that is because Angry Robot have relinquished the rights to them. They've given the rights back to Kate, and Kate has passed the rights on to me, and there will be Wizard's Tower ebook editions of Colin's two novels, that's Winter Song and Damage Time, coming out as soon as I can actually get the darn things made. And then in addition to that, I'm looking to produce hard copy editions of both novels for Colin's friends and fans and whatever, to have nice little collected edition things of them. And if we make enough money doing that lot, then I will do hard copy editions of anything else of Collins that I can possibly get my hands on. I'm delighted to announce a couple of things. First of all, that Lee Harris and Gareth have offered kindly to do introductions to the two novels, so I have a little bit of extra material. And also, the person who did the covers for the original books is Chris Moore, who happens to be the art guest of honour of BristolCon this year. And he has kindly agreed to let us have, well, we got the original art for Winter Song. We've actually got a new version of the cover of Damage Time, which he prefers. Probably have words with Lee about that. But there you go. So fingers crossed we will have those hardcovers for BristolCon so that Chris can sign the art as well. That will be good stuff. So that's what's happening. The main problem with the hardcovers, by the way, of course, is that with the new VAT regulations, I can't do crowdfunding from the UK anymore. So I'm also having to work with my boyfriend to set up a new company in the United States so we can actually do crowdfunding, and then we can get all this stuff done. Yes. Anyway, one other thing, which is not really science fiction and fantasy related, but we are coming up to LGBT History Month in February, and on February the 7th, which is a Saturday in the afternoon, I will be doing a talk at the M-Shed, which is called A Potted History of Gender Variance. I'll be taking people on a tour through time and around the globe, looking at all the different ways in which gender variant people have appeared in different countries and different times and whatever, and making the argument that it's not like trans people that are a modern invention, but it's the idea that there are only male people and female is actually a very recent Western European invention. And the whole of the rest of history and the rest of the world thinks that this is really a bit odd. There'll also be one or two interesting and amazing people that I've found in my historical researches that I should be telling you about. So it's free, starts at 2:30. On Saturday, February 7th.
I've got a question. Is it going to be recorded or something? Because I'm in London that day. I really would like to attend then. And it's just another great event I'm about to miss because I'm in London that day. So.
There's a lot of visuals that go with it, but I'll say I'll certainly take the microphone along. I am repeating it at Bath University, I think on the 27th or something like that. And that's possibly open to the public, but I'll need to check with them. But, you know, I can do these things at other times. Right. Other people have announcements. Pete.
Yeah. Bristol Festival of Literature on the 19th of February. launching, well, helping to launch, a new debut writer who's written a book called The Ship, which is a post-apocalyptic book. It's one of these ones that is being launched via a literary imprint, but it's actually really science fiction. It's from what I've seen of it, it's fantastic. And the writer's very interesting and has done one of these fantastic courses and has come off the slush pile, etc., etc. So it's got lots of interesting things to say to for new writers. So everybody's very welcome to come along. It's at 6 p.m. on February 19th at Foyles in Bristol.
Is there a Facebook event or anything for that?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So look on Facebook. I've got a couple. On the 27th of February, Gareth and I are going to be at the library doing something fringe-like. We're doing a couple of readings and a Q&A. There will be free wine at that one, courtesy of BristolCon. So that starts at 7 o'clock on Friday, February 27th. So you're all very welcome to come to that. And it's in the Children's Library, which has a pirate ship in it. Yes. All the wine will be gone about 5 minutes after I arrive.
Or even before.
So also, there's a cafe in the library, so they will be open. They'll be selling soft drinks and snacks. So if you have to come straight from work, you can get food. So yeah, that one's going to be fun. And Gareth's not dressing up for that, are you? I think Andy at the library would quite like you to dress up for it. He seemed very excited at the idea. As a monkey. Yeah, I think you could be a pirate monkey. That would be even better. It's some weird amalgam of you and you.
By the way, sorry for something absolutely, because when it comes to library, I remember that last year there was that awesome hive that was created, that is made of books. As anyone,
they've got it's kind of like a shed structure in the front of the library that's made of pencils. That's rather cool. So they've got hundreds and hundreds of pencils, and they've kind of weaved them into a tent.
I remember it was so awesome, and I did a few videos, and I was thinking maybe it has been moved somewhere else or something.
I don't know. I'll try and find out for you. Okay. I'll ask Andy at the library what happens to the thing made of books. Don't worry. Right, next month's fringe is the February. The something February. Hang on, I'll tell you. February the 16th, with John Hawkes Reid and Stark Holborn, who will possibly be dressed as a nun, but I doubt it. So we'd like to encourage this dressing up for the fringe. It works really well on the podcasts. So come to that one. It'll be awesome. Has anyone got any other announcements? Oh, right. In that case, thank you all for coming. And can we have just one last huge round of applause for Pete Nemmer, please? Thank you for coming.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.